I'm Rudy Roe Dallaflo Bigliani, along with my partner Telly TJ Vangeli. This is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, TJ and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. Remember, what happens here stays in heaven.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Have you ever thought about learning a new language, but then wondered, why don't they just learn English instead? We all know the immigrants are right on this one. The vocabulary and rules of the English language are incredibly varied, complex, and inconsistent, which means if English is the only language you speak, you've already done more than your fair share of learning. Unolingo is the one language learning program that confirms and rewards you for what you already know, and frees you from the tedium and effort of learning anymore. For the cost of just 7 half-calf pumpkin spice lattes every third full moon that appears under the sign of Scorpio during pumpkin spice season only at participating locations, we'll teach you all the words in other languages that you already know in English. Spanish words like actor horrible, which is horrible actor in English. French words like confetti dynamite in English. Or German words like perfect quiche in English. Why worry about which Norman or Saxon invasion of Britannia made us say venison instead of deer jerky, or frankfurter instead of hot dog? Unolingo skips all that mess and tidies up a nice, neat pile of friendly international English words for you to start using abroad today. Now available in Spanglish, Franglish, Germanglish, Chinanglish, Portuguese-English, and Greek. Unolingo, because one lingo is hard enough.
Well, hello there, dear listeners, wherever you may be across these fruited plains. Thank you for making us a part of your day. We're coming to you, as said before, from Las Vegas, also known as Chocolate City. And my oh my, have we got a show for you, our first episode post-election.
There's no king but Caesar, that is our cry this day. The Insane Clown Posse's endorsement for Kamala Harris did not push her across the line, as the media had expected, and guess who is back for either his second term or the longer and stronger first term that's already been in place. One way or another, DJT is in the house.
That is right. I'm no graduate of the Electoral College, but I know a second coming when I see one, and a win is a win. You know, some of the things that maybe he said he would do in his first term are actually that prophetic manifestation that we'll see come true here in this second term. So I'm just so excited.
Yeah, we're looking for him to be that charismatic savior we've been asking for and praying for. A little more Riz this time, a little less care, but we've seen that online chatter, or maybe this is kind of like the second coming of Jesus, or the second coming of Grover Cleveland. It's somewhere along that spectrum. You know, we've been seeing this guy his whole career, going from a New York libertine, a veritable one-man abortion factory in the 80s, to an evangelical folk hero without changing a single thing. So we are so excited. We are praying those Psalm 109:8 prayers for Trump today.
Well, and we're waiting just for each and every day for him to follow through on those great things, not just on the spiritual level. I mean, yes, he didn't quite lock her up physically, but he did lock her up spiritually. And I suppose that the Mexicans didn't actually pay pesos for that wall, mostly because we don't accept pesos here in the United States. But spiritually speaking, in the spiritual realm, the Mexicans are paying for that wall with their sins. And so all these things come together. We can see things as clearly as ever before. And my, oh my, just so excited for what's to come.
you know, I love something that I've been seeing on the conservative socials now that the election's over. Everybody's talking about how daddy is back in the house. And there is nothing the liberals hate more than when the conservatives appropriate the language of sexual deviancy to describe their own relationship to powerful people.
Absolutely. And I know that many of you are basking in this glory along with us and truly excited. But I just want to pause and kind of give a shout out to some of our listeners, some of our dear listeners that may not be so excited right now. I'm man enough to say that, you know, we are kind of, well, we truly are big tent sort of ministers, and we understand that our appeal is quite wide, and there's some people out there that maybe we're not so excited about the results of the election, and maybe some of those people truly do call themselves Christians and truly are people that support faithfully this ministry, and for whatever reason, and we'll get into some of those reasons, this is not a joyous occasion for them.
Yeah, you got some genuine Bible-believing Christians who are out there just kind of waiting for that black sedan to pull up into their driveway, whisk them away on that airplane, throwing you into some brutalist architecture fever dream of a law enforcement compound just to make you become Secretary of Agriculture.
There's some people that are stressed. You know, they may be in their skewl, they may be in their place of worship, only to hear that knock on the door, black van pulls up, whisks them away, as you said, into a private plane, takes you to some unknown place, to a padded cell, only to be interrogated by a panel of congressmen.
If you're like us and you've been alternative city councilors of Las Vegas and had a successful ministry that flatters his ascendancy, you may also be a perfect candidate for a fate worse than Herod Antipas's when his parasites were going strong. You might become the titular head of an agency in the federal bureaucracy.
Some of y'all are like us, and we count ourselves in this category. As TJ said, you're finding yourself about to take a long walk on a short pier into an awaiting boat off the coast of Florida, only to get dragged into a Mar-a-Lago conference room. Handshake here, handshake there. Next thing you know, you are serving in a spot that you have no business being in. But all the while, you are doing your hardest, your best work on the campaign, raising funds, getting people all sacked. Next thing you know, your whole past is being ripped apart by a bunch of the same people in Washington that you're trying to destroy. And they're talking about things that they have no business talking about. Things like your criminal record, your public record, your taxes. I mean, my goodness. And you could find yourself absolutely naked before this very country and completely overmatched.
It was one thing to potentially be one of his spiritual advisors, like I tried to do in the 2021 timeframe, where all you got to do is like throw out the occasional encouraging prophecy like, hey, your name kind of alliterates with trumpet, which is presumably useful to God in some sort of way. But it's a whole new level of pressure to be trying to figure out what interest rate is going to make the guy happy. Let's go over a couple of people who've been stressing for the job. Well, they are dressing for the job. We feel good about some of these guys, but we got our sympathetic nervous systems are going crazy at the same time. First up, we got Matt Watergates for Attorney General. Boy, after 18 months of practicing law, he is like a Rookie of the Year candidate here to go all the way from the lowest level attorney to the highest level in just about 18 months, maybe still eligible to sort of be a redshirt freshman in there. I just think, whoa, this guy is one of our best illegal minds. He's an attorney and a general at the same time. Why didn't they think of that before? Just make the generals into the attorneys. And he'll be someone we look back on for his long and propitious career as AG. He's a rock solid pick who'll sail through the process, serve out a full term without scandal or resignation. Matt Gaetz, what do you have to say about him?
Well, I've always been a big fan of Matt Gaetz. I think that time back in COVID when he showed up to the Capitol building wearing one of them World War II gas masks and He knew how to lead by example in the toughest times. And I think, as you said, an attorney and a general at the same time, what more could you ask for?
Next person we got a little bit of empathic stress response for here is Linda McMahon, who's going to be the Secretary of Education after playing such a prominent role in professional wrestling. Oh boy, I think that she's had a little bit too much time in the arena, in the big box wrestling world. But what does she know about the luchadores and the backyard chair fights that form the real working class foundation of small wrestling businesses?
You know, I do recognize some of these reservations about Linda that you mentioned, but I think, you know, what we're looking for right now is someone who can take us back to what real education was. And I think that was just learning about wars, getting that straight, and then building a platform of education from there. And for someone that has been in the business of fighting, wrestling, I think she's the right lady for the job.
Yeah, that's so true. We need to get back into that reenactment-based education. I think I learned more about the Civil War and the Revolutionary War in that particular mode than I ever did from books and classes. I love that violent community theater. And I could just see Benjamin Franklin loving those ring girls. How do you think about that?
Oh, man. And with that skullet walking around that ring, that's great. And I think that's the kind of thing we can be looking forward to with a nomination such as her.
Somebody who's getting the call up to the big leagues is Pete Hegseth. You know, the sometime substitute weekend host on Fox News, sometimes getting called up to be the weekday host when one of those other guys are sick. I like him. I think he knows that he's going to lead the real man's army. That's kind of like a G.I. Joe Beachbody crew in Space Force. What do you have to say about Pete?
Well, I recognize a lot of humility in Pete. I know that this is kind of a step down from his more prestigious role on Fox News. I kind of recognize that. I think it takes a lot of humility to be one of these guys who's leading in the armed forces. And I think all the soldiers are going to recognize that and follow suit.
Yeah, especially the 130,000 soldiers who outranked him. I think that they will get a particular boost from seeing that recommitting your life to Christ is an alternate way back to these high-stakes leadership roles. You know, you can meet the basic requirements of leading the largest, most expensive army in the world. You know, I think that's where you don't see enough of this in the addiction treatment world. You know, you work with alcoholics a bit, and what you realize is what they need is a big reward for not getting caught anymore. It's all kind of like how your parole board likes to hear that you've been participating in that prison ministry for the last 3 months, and isn't that a good enough reason to have the rest of your sentence commuted? After all, what God has forgiven, no secular government should become aware of at your confirmation hearing.
There's a couple other cats I was thinking about bringing up in this category as well that I'm pretty excited about. One of those is Mr. Chris Wright in the Department of Energy. First of all, got a nice name, Wright, but I mean, just to sum it up, I think this guy's fracking awesome. Back in 2019, my guy drank fracking fluid, which is a clear connection to Mark 16:18, which says, "They shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover." So I love that. Love that way that he can embody those verses. And you know, we need someone in the Department of Energy that does not believe in climate change, but does believe in God.
Snake handling has always been one of those parts of the Bible that's really under-referenced in sermons. I think that that is a place where we need to really emphasize that, both in our own ministry and in the execution of administrative federal duties.
I mean, that's a great test of someone's ability and a test of their mettle, so to speak, is can they handle a snake. Speaking of another guy who's got some good mettle, and that's this gentleman, Sean Duffy. I think we're really cut from the same cloth as this guy. I mean, just a cool up-and-coming guy who's got a lot of influence, but yet not afraid to roll up his sleeves and spend other people's hard-earned cash, but for good things. And then make sure that the government doesn't roll up their sleeves and get their hands into that cash. So anyway, Sean was got a start on The Real World Boston. I mean, you talk about a show right there. So we know that he's got a good rap. He's also the manliest man's man that's ever been competing in log rolling and speed climbing. I mean, you hear about those outdoorsman sports that sometimes you see late night on ESPN. Well, that dude was right up there with them. And so if you're looking for a politician that can roll fatties and do speed, then Duffy is your dude.
And whether somebody's been on a reality show before or their role in the government is going to be a reality show, one way or the other, they got to get ready for those apprentice-style forced spot firings when you just don't do what you're supposed to do. So that's something that's relatable across the board. You know, are you going to get that rose from The Bachelor? Are you going to survive on Survivor? That's the experience that matters to your fellow Americans and also to the incoming president.
That's such a great point. I mean, it all comes back to reality TV. Now, we're really excited about those nominations. But you know what? There's some other things I think we need to talk about as it relates to some of these nominations. I, for one, to go back to the previous point, am a little bit afraid. Because I'm afraid if I get selected to lead a department, that perhaps I won't be the best man for the job. And I'm man enough to say that right now.
Rudy, I so appreciate that. You know, it's when you got the big book energy, but you've also got the humility to say, I don't know what the Coast Guard does. I heard there's some old lady sea soldier in charge now who doesn't quite truck with Trump world, so that one's a real danger for us. Boy, talk about being stressed to the max.
Oh man, I'm glad you cleared the air there. I don't think it's a shame to admit sometimes when we're afraid. I mean, all of us, of course, you know, with the president putting together his cabinet, we all want Donald Trump to tap us like he's never tapped anyone before for these positions. And obviously I feel a bit like, you know, that college football star on draft night, just hoping the phone doesn't ring with a call from the Jets or the Jaguars. I know what we can do. I just don't want to get caught up in the wrong department. And I don't want anyone in the woke community to be calling me a secretary for that matter as well, because that's a woman's job. And I'm more of a secretarius as a man. But anyway, I'm scared of getting put in the wrong position. For example, you know, just if the phone rang tonight and I got asked to head up the Department of Agriculture, I'd think about my experience. Yes, have I raised some wheat? Well, sure, on some good land, but I didn't have a way of transporting it, and all I had was wheat, and I didn't have any ore. And not only that, but no one was rolling a three, and that's where the sheep were. And furthermore, I couldn't find a way to trade the wheat for things that I needed to develop, like getting logs and bricks. And the next thing you know, your opponent got a library and the longest road and the game's over.
I mean, you gotta create some roads, perhaps even the longest road, like Route 66. Some way to get to those victory points. Maybe the largest army would be another one you could consider. Or just turning pastures into wool. I don't know, but one thing I would do if we got put in charge of agriculture was I would end the unjust 3-to-1 resource trading advantage to the liberal coastal port settlements, which has so contributed to the polarization and the wealth inequity we see.
I mean, that's the wisdom right there. You know, if I get asked, I'm gonna have you be my vice.
We would cover every one of those 507 million hexagonal tiles on that board with the love of the Lord and the wisdom of his anointed.
To tell you the truth, I'd be as nervous as Samson's barber with a donkey's jaw clippers if I got a call to lead the Department of Commerce. I mean, I know a thing or two about business. One minute I have stacks of $500 bills with hotels on Marvin Gardens, and the next thing I know I nearly miss going to jail. Rolled doubles, and before I pass go, my whole stack of five hundos is gone after landing on Park Place.
The first thing I would do if I were in charge of commerce would be to drop those regulations where if you got four houses, you can't just add a fifth and call it a hotel. I think that's the natural way of doing things. You just build that house that kind of like bridges all along the other top of them, and you go four into five there in a way that, you know, you could start Airbnb in that whole block. instead of just trying to rent out one house at a time.
That's true. And you know, one of the things that's always gotten me is I don't think there's enough room on that block anyway for four. I've always thought they only had about enough room for three houses, and they expect you to put four all the way across. I mean, we don't. That's something that I think the Department of Commerce should try to solve right there.
There's hardly room for the four houses, but somehow you can drive a battleship or a shoe around the block, and that's not regulated in any way.
Well, it goes to show that there's probably someone out there that's better suited for that. And speaking of someone else is better suited, I'm also just going to say it out here publicly that I'm not interested in the Department of Transportation. I mean, I know a thing or two about roads, but railroads always get me tied up. I find myself choosing the north-south destination cards, and I give in to the allure of the rainbow card. Try as I may, I always tell myself I'm not going to do this, but dang it, I get caught hook, line, and sinker for these complicated destination cards of 6 points, and I can just lay down a 6-train route for 15 points right there. A transportation department is not for me, because I wouldn't call myself that type of train guy.
Just think about this though. What if driving were also a turn-based strategy game? I mean, that should be a plain as day truism, but if you're driving a train, it's more obvious, right? Like, if you hit all the lights, you can go for 1,000 miles without stopping. So I think we should employ some of those same technological marvels that we use over on the tracks, out on the roads, to really optimize our routes. And, you know, that all has to do for the trains with claiming a route. If I was in a car that could claim a route and just have open road in front of me, I could score up all those points, complete all those tickets. I could be driving the most, visiting the most national parks, getting all kinds of bonus points.
Man, I'm thinking that. I mean, you keep talking like that, you're going to get a phone call pretty soon. That's some good thinking right there. I'm kind of feeling nervous about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I know that that's still out there, and I know I'm still out here. And maybe I've been shortlisted, but I just gotta say it. I don't know if I've ever made it past 3 clicks in Minesweeper. And so therefore, I don't feel confident being able to run that type of position.
Yeah, sometimes you feel safe, like when your first click is on a 1 and you think, I got 7 good choices around me at least, maybe 8 good choices around me. I can proceed boldly. But that's when you realize that Minesweeper is basically Russian roulette and you just bust on your second click and you need to start a new game real quick so no one else in the internet cafe sees how bad you're losing so far. And it is the same thing with the regulations of these nuclear power plants. But, you know, I think it might be a little simpler than Minesweeper or the Sudoku of the seas, as I call it, because how bad can it really get? You know, maybe we're too stressed out. And for every Homer Simpson out at that plant, you got a Lenny, a Carl, a Smithers keeping things going okay.
And after all, you know, the president does have the launch codes, but you can't tell me that, hey, you can got some cheat codes for some of these tough jobs. And I think right there, that's probably how they're able to do it, is with some of the Minesweeper cheat codes. Now, one position that is, my goodness, it is so big is the State Department. I was wondering, TJ, what do you think about Secretary of State?
First thing you got to do when you're Secretary of State, which I genuinely hope we do not become, but should we be so called, you got to reduce the board down to the 42 main countries, the 6 main continents, just like the real world, you know. And the goal of the State Department really is to militarily occupy that entire board. And there's that distinct advantage you get from the 3 red dice when you're attacking against the 2 white defending dice. And I think that is nature's way of saying, go on the attack. Take on Greenland. It's that important land bridge between Canada and Iceland, and then from Iceland on into the rest of Europe. And we got to start treating the Middle East as one big country. You know, it's kind of like the key in between all the other continents on the board. And if you control that choke point, you can really prevent folks from moving their armies around the board. Another strategy you could take is just put all your armies in Indonesia, because that's the only way into Oceania. But I heard of a good player who held those 4 territories and then came back and won the whole game after a whole night of rolling some lucky 3s. What most people don't know anymore, based on the sorry state of our public education system, is that little dotted line that crosses the South Atlantic between Brazil and North Africa is actually a way that you can just hop on across between continents without any kind of rare rolls of the dice or special power cards.
TJ, I think you're lined up perfectly for some of these things that, you know, that maybe I would feel a little reluctant to do. Like, I mean, I'm more of a five-card stud player. I don't know if you're more of a Texas Hold'em, but, you know, I don't know what these days Department of Treasury, maybe if they move toward kind of a five-card stud situation, that would make me a better candidate.
You know, Treasury really is one of those departments where if we got selected, we'd have to turn it all around, you know, going from this sort of like monetary safety, you know, safe investment kind of thing, bringing back that zest for adventure, that high risk, high reward version of government bonds that everybody likes. So I'm thinking that if we were to run that one, three times a year, you'd find out whether your bonds are going to pay out or not. And that's going to replace those embarrassingly boring revelations about interest rates going up or down by 0.25%. Instead, you're looking at the first flop in the spring, the turn in the summer, and the river card just before the holiday to see if Santa's going to make it a happy year for the kiddos.
I love that. I love the way that Las Vegas has really rubbed off on you.
Well, we're talking about what we're stressed out about running, but there are a few departments we would like to run for the very specific purpose of shutting them down as soon as we're put in charge. That is one of the major types of leadership, the one where you just tell everyone at the company they're fired. And that's been immortalized in film by George Clooney in Up in the Air.
Is that the one where he got all them balloons up in that house and then he would tell people they're fired?
I don't know. I didn't see the balloon scene. I'd eaten a lot of Twizzlers that night, and I got as sleepy as Jesus on a fishing trip with his apostles. So I don't know if we just kept on firing, but like got better at it towards the end. I didn't see through to the denouement on that one. Anyway, here's the list of departments we would shut down day one. First of all, Department of Veterans Affairs. I say right away, there will be no more affairs provided by the government to these veterans, much less ones surveilled and condoned by the government.
Oh, absolutely. And I can understand in a ticker tape parade, you'd be smooching a lot of different ladies if you was come home from that war all victorious. But that should start and stop with that parade. And I don't want affairs to be a part of the PTSD situation. So we just need to stop it right now. No more veterans having affairs.
Another one that just sounds like it's a huge waste of money is the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Whatever that means. I've never heard of this one, but boy, we need no more float planes. It is not the 1920s anymore. And boy, what else we don't need is regulation on space, which is inherently the space of freedom that just ought to be penetrated and explored, not regulated. So I propose that this agency be destroyed entirely and the vestiges of it just folded into NASA.
Absolutely. I think this is from a bygone era. We don't travel in blimps anymore. We just have them go over football games. If you want to spend your money taking pictures with big old telescopes, then you can send that somewhere else, but that should not be a government agency.
Next up for first day abolishment, Department of Energy. Because, boy, we need to lift all of the regulations on these caffeinated energy drinks. I want to see 64-ounce cans of Irish Cream Java Monster. I want to see Ultra Vice Guava. I want to see Baja Blast 5% ABV Hard Mountain Dew. So we are sweating like your saver at Gethsemane by the time you get through a couple of those cans.
Absolutely. We don't need any regulations on guarana or B vitamins and amino acids. And my goodness, I looked the other day and there's this thing called a 5-hour energy. It took one little sip. My oh my. We just got to send that thing up to about a 20 ounce. And I'm pretty sure you get a 24-hour energy out of that. Because, I mean, what's the big deal about 5 hours of energy anyway? I mean, a day is 24 hours. So I'm need energy all day. I'm going to need a 20-ounce 5-hour energy.
Yeah, it seems like one of those New York City regulations on the size of a soft drink. And it's not like the Department of Energy is keeping the country's lights on or anything. They just need to cool down and let pass through the next generation of CBD-laced, steroidally enhanced, individually canned vodka and Red Bulls that will give our nation's truckers the advantages they need against the self-driving robot truck competition.
Amen.
All right, the wokest part of the industrial pregnancy complex is the Department of Labor. I am completely opposed to getting the government involved in this. Delivery is what matters. We're not going to measure the success based on this participation trophy, like, oh, you went into labor, you got an A for effort. No, I don't want all this woo-woo stuff about doulas and midwifery and breathing patterns. I just care about at what speed that baby comes blazing out of your bazonga and hitting the net against the opposite wall, counting a one on the scoreboard for every one of those little babies who come slip and slide now.
That's right. We don't need a Department of Labor. If anything, a Department of Delivery, but I think such a thing should be handled by the state, a state-by-state situation. But my, oh my, that is a department that I would say we need to trim the fat on. Okay, that brings us to our Turnt or Burnt section. And as you know, this is where we bring you some hot topics and news, and then we decide if they are turnt or burnt. So the first one, Brother TJ, is Zuckerberg singing with T-Pain in a collab. What do you think about this, turnt or burnt?
I was cringing like the Ninevites under the prospect of God's judgment on this one. I think he's being blackmailed. I don't know if it's by T-Pain or somebody else.
You know, I'm gonna come at this a different way. I think if we give this song some room to breathe, that down the road we'll all be saying that it's turnt. I mean, I don't pretend to know much about the Pain, but I know Mike Zuckerberg, and you know, he's been doing some reinvention on himself. He's always out in front of it. So adding, you know, music to his resume, I think is kind of interesting and compelling. I know his inspiration was to go back and pay tribute to a song that was important to him as a youngster, which is kind of reminds me of a cover that we did a few years ago. And I know our fans were familiar with it when we covered DC Talk's song, Colored People. We tried to get a few of them guys to perform it with us, but they were too busy. But you know, I'll actually take some credit for maybe possibly being the inspiration for old Zuck to follow suit.
Yeah, but don't you think, Rudy, that this one's just too weird? It's like it's supposed to be racy and provocative, but it's got all the spice and brashness of your mom reading a lengthy list of all the swear words you need to avoid, and then telling you what she thinks each one of them means.
Well, you know, to be honest, I did listen to it on the clean radio edit version, so I'll have to go and give it a re-listen.
No, Rudy, it's an acoustic version, which really denudes the song of the danceability, but the lyrics weren't actually the acoustic version. He's still talking about sweat dripping from his you-know-whats. I think that maybe got that one out of the radio edit.
Mercy.
And what a weird anniversary gift, like, Miss Chan is on the phone telling him, no, I don't want this gift. I liked it when you had them rename the Harvard Medical School after me, but this is too strange. Is T-Pain or Lil Jon there? And then she's talking to them and asking them, like, guys, have you tried to talk some sense into my husband? And they're like, yeah.
Well, okay, I guess we're on separate sides of this one.
All right, well, it's burnt. But what isn't burnt is this next one, which is that somehow a gentleman has been arrested for the crime, which I haven't seen in any criminal books that I've ever read, of strapping 300 tarantulas and centipedes to his body. Turnt or burnt?
Wow. Well, this is the type of thing that would never happen in America, first of all. This type of thing that happens in countries that do not fear God. So we're talking 320 tarantulas, 110 centipedes, and 9 bullet ants strapped to a man's body. And this happened in Peru, and apparently he was stopped because his stomach looked bulky. Well, that's kind of interesting right there. But let me just bring some scripture into this story. Matthew 26:52 saith, "For all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword." And I'm just going to say this dude ain't long for this world, because that's just playing with fire right there. So it leaves two options. This guy's either satanic or so full of the spirit that he's immune. So when we look at the details, we see Peru. Okay, Catholic. Okay, so not God-fearing. Korean, Asian, no Christians there. Therefore, I'd have to say this dude is satanic and it's burnt.
You know, this is where the discernment of spirits gifting that maybe I have a little greater measure than you, I'm sorry to say, might come in here, because talk about the fruit of gentleness and patience. I mean, these things do not like to be leashed, and he has taken the time to individually tie them together with strings without crushing their little thoraxes and bodisection connectors. This guy should be going to brain surgery school, not the Sioux City Slammer.
You know, I guess that does reveal some sort of the fruit of the spirit, so I might have to go back on that.
You know, Rudy, this just reminds me of that time when we were on that flight between Quito and Las Vegas, and you'd put all those unhashed Ecuadorian spider eggs inside a shaving cream bottle like the Newman guy on Jurassic Park. And then it like slipped out of your hands and was rolling around underneath everyone's seats, and we just couldn't tell where it went or whether it had sprung open. We just had to get on the intercom by saying we're going to do a marriage proposal. But instead, we just did the neighborly thing and warned everyone that the bottle was on the loose, that we couldn't guarantee that some of the eggs weren't fixing to burst. It's so hard to tell those tiny animals whether they're young or at the point of maturity or not, because so much depends on the moisture and temperature of their environment.
You know, a lot of money in tarantula eggs if you can move them. Now, speaking of money, our next turn to burn topic here. A UK man was arrested in a cheddar heist in which he had 48,000 pounds of cheese. TJ, is this turned or burnt?
Okay, this guy's got a bright future in the distribution and logistics industries, because how did he carry all 48,000 pounds? Like, did he roll up in an oil tanker with wheels? I figure with a couple of sturdy paper bags, I could probably steal 17 or 18 pounds of cheese per trip from the storehouse to my escape vehicle. And we're talking about five standard school bus fulls of cheese out of this place. This guy's a genius.
And a couple things come to my mind. One, I didn't know there was so much money in cheese. I mean, I used to, I'd use the word dough or bread to be synonymous with money. I didn't know that we could use the word cheddar. So that's kind of cool. But the other thing is that would be one heck of a plate of nachos. I mean, I'd be wondering, what's this being used for? Like being that it's in the UK, it could be kind of like a Robin Hood situation. Maybe the dairy had it coming, and there was a fine upstanding ministry, or a solid cutting edge web-based nonprofit, or a couple of good guys across the pond who would take those five loaves and two fishes and turn it into 100,000 pounds of cheese. So I think it's turnt, and more of that alabaster jar of perfume grated into an incredible plate of microwave nachos and offered to the Lord's work. So those that say that they're burnt, I think they're taking on the Judas spirit.
As long as you set your microwave to the highest power setting only for about 2.5 minutes, this will remain turnt instead of burnt. And I could just taste the goodness of the Lord in this thievery right now. All right, next up, the break dancer Ray Gunn has retired, and the tributes are pouring in. I don't tell you this very often, but you should stop listening right now. And you just voice activate your chat bot to tell you how to get Bing to Google up this YouTube for you, because it is a thing of beauty. If you just look at Cameron Bynum's end zone celebration, it is one of the most accurate mimetic artistic efforts I have ever seen in my life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every time I watch that, just brings a smile to my face, because you're taking a sport that was new to the Olympics, and that is influencing the play on the field in the NFL.
And Cameron, I mean, he has been storing up in his heart, like Mary does all throughout Luke's gospel, this special dance for about 4 months. The guy's a special teamer. He doesn't often get to do the big boy stuff like touchdowns, but he has been working on this in his spare time just outside of the weight room so the other guys didn't, you know, steal it from him in the meantime. But he had a week 10 special to bring up just in that time and place for such a time as this. I just love that.
And I would agree, absolutely. But I don't want this to overshadow a Ray Gunn in the retirement as well. You know, I think she took breakdancing to a whole different level. I was like an athlete who goes out on top. But I have to say I'm a bit upset that I think she still had some more meat on the bone and we're being robbed of how she could continue to revolutionize the sport, especially with the Los Angeles hosting the next Olympics. So for that reason, I think she's turned, but her decision to retire is a bit burnt to me.
Yeah, she really did have that next stage of her career because she first raised the profile of the sport from a C team to a B team, and getting from a C to a B is often the hardest accomplishment in the grade book, as my 10th grade chemistry teacher, Mr. Moskowitz, used to tell me personally about my own prospects. I do like that she raised it up in status, that people who weren't aware of the sport a couple years ago are now aware that it's not popular enough to keep going. I think that is a real boost in popularity. It's like, what are all these other no-name sports that people didn't even realize that the Olympics already abandoned? I, for instance, used to think a B-boy or a B-girl was just like a diminutive term of endearment for someone who played B-ball, and how wrong I was.
All right, this takes us to our next topic, the Tropicana Hotel implosion during a fireworks show. TJ, is this turnt or burnt?
It is burnt, and quite literally so, but also conceptually, because who knew that fireworks were so powerful? So Americans are already armed to the teeth, but here is a whole other kind of weapon that we could be adding in to supplement our already bursting stores of potable water and canned goods. Just get those grade A fireworks filling in the crawl spaces, open spots between wall boards, get in that area around your furnace with this life-saving, safety-guaranteeing substance that can be used at a moment's notice to repel a foreign invasion. I think the Tropicana implosion fireworks show / demolition is turnt all the way up.
Well, you know, this story really does hit close to home for us. You know, the old Tropicana Hotel was kind of a staple in this community, but I think there's something fishy about this one. You know, fireworks are a normal thing around here. We see them all the time, but generally they don't demolish buildings, as you mentioned. And I kind of smell a rat because when I grabbed a newspaper off the table of another patron at Denny's the following morning after the implosion, I read that now this is going to be the site of the new Oakland A's of Las Vegas field. And that's great and all. I'm glad to have a field, but it's kind of an unfortunate fireworks accident, and you got to give that some time to breathe and mourn before you claim it for baseball. So for just the sake of just being polite and letting people mourn, I'd say it's burnt.
Right. Do you want to come into town with having a branded demolition catastrophe? This one, you know, it's like the apostrophe after the A's. This one belongs to the A's. I feel like we got to talk about that apostrophe. What are they saying belongs to the A's, or are they saying there's multiple A's? Because that's kind of like one of those signs you see that's got a black background and neon colors up in North Dakota or something, where they say, "We have pancakes," and it's pancake apostrophe S. That's what I see going on here with the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah, it's not a plural S. It's definitely a possessive. And I'm assuming that they possess athleticism, something like that, but that's a real good question.
All right, turnt or burnt, the state of Oklahoma has found that only one Bible actually fits all the purchase requirements in their request for proposals for inclusion of a Bible in every classroom in the state, and it happens to be the Trump Bible. It's the only one that's got the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and is in King James. That is a unique combination that a bunch of Patriot Bibles out there just miss at least one of those elements. They go New King James, they go New Living, they don't have the Bill of Rights in there, they just have the regular Constitution, but this one meets all the requirements. What do we got on this one? Trump Bible Oklahoma State's public schools.
Well, I'm glad someone came around to all this, because after all, it is the Holy Scriptures, and there needs to be, for the sake of our children and the sake of this country, a standard. The standard is the standard. I will not accept the kids going to school and one teacher says, I want the Message. The other one says, I want the NIV. I want the Zondervan Study Bible. You know, you don't know what's in there. But with the Trump one, you definitely do. The thing I'm wondering about is, what are we going to do with the Bibles that do not comply, right? How do we know that they're being taken out of the schools and out of the classrooms? And so I propose that the only way to do it, and the only biblical way, is through fire.
Yeah, let your light so shine before men that they're blinded to all possible alternatives. I like that a lot. You know, I like a lot of stuff that Oklahoma's doing these days. A lot of it's turnt. It's kind of like the state's the backwards baseball cap of Texas, full of imported Floridians of yesteryear. So good on you, Oklahoma. Keep on turning up the Trump Bible and burning the rest.
All right, this takes us to our last topic, which is the beef between Lamar and Drake. And that has become a series of lawsuits and my oh my, a pretty long Wikipedia page. But my friend TJ, what do you think about the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef?
Oh my, whether it's Drick versus Drake or Ken versus Darkwing Duck, I can't keep track of these guys, but apparently lawsuits are the new urban culture, and that is what the liberals have done to our once great American cities. They've reduced the rap rivalries from their heyday of gunfights and turf wars and gangs, the dull gray of hurt feelings, language policing, and litigation. I think it is burnt. I think that you need to go back and ask yourself this question if you are Drake. So your rival found your soft underbelly and took a rhetorical stab at it. Like, come on, bottle up those therapeutic tears and have Gwyneth Paltrow sell them online as a vaginal health supplement. It should be against the law to want to make stuff like that against the law.
Yeah, I mean, I know these two guys are very talented, and I know that they're at the top of their game, and they lead the industry. They consistently perform well. They both know how to create and innovate, and they're very strong and respected. But as I've gone through page after page after page of the history of these two, I'm still a bit baffled. I mean, Lamar plays for the Ravens. Drake May plays for the Patriots. They never played each other this year. And even in college, it's not like they're from rival schools. I mean, this ain't like 50 Cent in the game when the game was kicked out of G-Unit. This is football, and you're allowed to diss the competition.
Right, and there's nothing like loudly complaining about something like a whiny baby to really diminish its notoriety and close down further disses. I do like, though, how this is a stand-in for the rivalry between the USA and Canada more broadly. There's still hope for the unity of the nation. We just need some lamewad common enemies like a former child star on the Disney Channel.
Our country always needs a good enemy, kind of a punching bag type of enemy, the type of enemy that doesn't do away with flannel and maple syrup, so that we continually can make that the target for which we can test out our new arms.
Well, Kendrick Lamar, I've never listened to a single line of your poetry or a bar of your compositions, but I do wish you luck. You are America's champion in this particular intra-Olympic period where we need some good international victories, and you are well on your way to a technical knockout on this Drake character.
Well, dear listeners, that's all the time we have for today. This is Cross Vegas, and we've been coming to you today from the District.